Aussie music is something to be proud of.
Wear it like a badge.
Because it's Australian bands and artists that are the influences of so many other musicians the world over. So at Triple M,
we're proud to be able to showcase the power of the Aussie music scene.
Paying both homage to the greats that have stood the test of time, right alongside the current, the emerging, the future influences.
The ones that will be next to make their mark on the global music scene.
If it's Aussie and it rocks, it's right here. This is Triple M's Homegrown with Matty O.
Yes, right around the country on the Triple M network. That is 49 stations and on the listener app. We welcome to the show a band we've been lucky enough to have on multiple times, an incredible career. We've grown up with them and they haven't aged a day. Of course, I'm talking about Eskimo Joe. Gold, platinum albums, multiple number ones. Sold out shows, festival favourites. And we love all the new stuff we've been getting. Say something, a gift for us during lockdown and our latest taste.
Smoke cigarettes. Now I'm just gasping for some air.
Embarking on a massive acoustic tour right around the country. New music, always a pleasure as we welcome Kevin, Joel, Eskimo Joe. Lads, good to see you.
Wow, what an intro. Matty.
Yeah, it kind of reminded me of Prestige Worldwide.
Yeah.
Of Step Brothers.
Research, development.
I feel quite proud to be part of Eskimo Joe now after that intro.
Absolutely.
Hey, congrats on the first time. It's really cool.
Thank you.
I really love is the clip. Like, that's like a real trip down memory lane, like Channel V playing the Big Day Out, ARIA Awards. Is it weird watching a video clip like that put together?
Yeah, look, I don't know about yourself, but we don't really go back and watch our video clips after we've done them.
Never.
Or often listen to our records after we've done them. So it's kind of nice to go back and be reminded of, like, you know, Mini Cav and Mini Joel.
It's like flicking through a photo album at the folks' place, you know. Yeah. It kind of feels like that.
Yeah,
but it's good. I guess the triumph is we're still around. So it reminds you of, it reminds us of that.
Yeah. I think what's really cool is, like, you guys were playing during a really special time in Australian music. Like, I was watching it on Channel V. Like, how much fun was it doing, like, the Big Day Outs and the Home Bakes and just, like, looking at all those lights?
Halcyon days, mate. Yeah. They were pretty good.
It's one of those things you feel like, oh, is that gone forever? And I don't know if it is that idea of the Big Day Outs where you'd kind of get onto stage in front of like 30,000 deep people.
Yeah.
You know, I don't feel like we've experienced that kind of show for a long time. But mind you, we played this tour at the end of last year called the Good Things.
Yeah.
And that was wicked. And that was kind of like, I got that same feeling walking out the stage of just this mass of people, you know.
It was a real nostalgia fest kind of thing, like Limp Bizkit obviously headlined. But there are a lot of people like kind of our age cruising around at that festival, having a great time.
Yeah.
And that felt good. And that's kind of what the single's about. It's kind of, it's a nostalgia thing.
Yeah.
So it feels like that kind of thing's really popping off at the moment.
Yeah. And I think what's really cool is that video clip actually reminded me of something I remember watching live when you guys won an ARIA and Stu, well.
And the ARIA goes to Eskimo Joe!
We really have to thank all the people who've helped us and loved us and supported us over the years. My beautiful girlfriend, Jen, who as of yesterday is now my beautiful fiancé, Jen. Mum and Dad, I'm getting married.
That was pretty special.
Yeah. Yes. He stole the show with that one. I mean, look, even looking back at those ARIA experiences, I mean, the Australian recording industry is such a different world now than it was then. But it was a big deal, you know, those ARIA Awards. I remember rocking up to like the red carpets that you'd walk down, you know, going into the ARIA Awards, and they'd be deep with people all rocking up to get photos and autographs. It felt like a really exciting moment.
Did I read this right? 35 nominations?
Sounds about right, yeah.
That's nuts, right?
Yeah, we haven't been for a long time. Maybe it's time for a new nomination. We'll go for the Adult Contemporary Award.
That's it.
You guys had some tough competition, you know, Silverchair, Powderfinger, you know, I mean, they just dominated those, didn't they?
They did.
Yeah. But sometimes, you know, losing at those things was the motivation you needed to go and write the next record. I mean, like, I remember that particular ARIAs where we were up for a whole bunch of awards and we lost most of them to Jet that year.
Every single one.
I wasn't going to say that. I think we won Best Artwork or something like that. But they, you know, when they got up onto stage, like I remember going to that ARIA Awards, you know, dressed, we'd, we all bought ourselves suits because we were like, what do you wear to an ARIA award? So we all bought suits. So we rocked up looking like dorks on our way to a school ball. And then Jet got up on stage and beat us at all the awards and they looked like rock stars. And
yeah,
I was
yeah,
like,
yeah.
all right, maybe there's something in this.
Yeah.
So we went home and we wrote the Black Fingernails Red Wine record because we wanted to be those guys looking like rock stars on stage.
Those after parties, they've sounded pretty crazy. We had Ben Gillies and Chris Joannou in recently and they were talking about how they were getting pretty loose at that one hotel. Was there in Sydney where they used to do them off?
The Siebel.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That got knocked down. Yeah, that was a notorious place. You could kind of rock up to the bar there and they'd, you know, there'd be Kirk Pengley on a Wednesday night having a drink or whatever. You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yep.
That's exciting.
Stories of Michael Chugg rolling in just wearing a towel.
Yeah.
He's going to a toga party. Yeah. Classic.
You guys are currently on tour with Incubus and... live. What's it like playing festivals with these guys? That must be pretty fun.
Look, it's pretty nostalgic because, you know, the songs you remember playing, you know, around the traps back in the day.
Yeah.
The chap who's put it together, John Zachariah, he's called it The Lookout because there is actually this venue in Perth called The Lookout. And when he played in cover bands back in the day, he would play live in Incubus. And so when he put this festival on, he was like, well, it's got to be called The Lookout.
No way. Yeah. Really? Oh, cool. And what's it like, you know, kind of watching a band like that? And you just, are they the kind of acts you watch? You're like, oh, yep, they had that song. Yep, they had that song. Yep, that's another hit. That's another hit.
Especially live, it seems. Yeah. They had a lot more hits than you remember.
Yeah, big time. Hey, talk to us about the first time. How did this song kind of come together? Because you guys are all kind of living, you know, in different parts of Australia now. What's the writing process like for you guys?
We kind of steal moments. Like if I'm in WA, I'll, you know, text Cav, say, should we do a day kind of thing? And we probably went about writing about three songs before we landed on this one. Mm.
Yeah. I was going through my voice memos and there's like so many iterations of like a different verse or this or that. We're like, people ask us all the time, like, oh, you're going to get in and make a record. We stuff about so much just making one song that I think we need to put a couple of years aside just to get through a record. But we were talking about the Good Things Festival before and, you know, we played those shows and had felt this electric, tangible energy between the crowd, you know, and ourselves. And unlike when we put out Say Something, which was in the middle of lockdown and we hadn't really done a song in a long time, we kind of bottled that energy, that tangible electricity that we're feeling from the crowd and then went straight into my little studio in Fremantle and mucked about until we got a song together. And like we were talking about before, it felt like it had to be about nostalgia because that was what we were experiencing at these festivals. And So we had that theme and we had this energy and we kind of put it together and chipped away at it. And I think we gave ourselves one final day to finish the recording and we had to do a photo shoot and finish the recording and everything. And we got to the 11th hour and we were like, literally like, we've almost done it. And then I think Joel was like, we need to write a bridge. We're like, literally just as we're walking out the door, we wrote the bridge. And now I can't imagine the song without the bridge. It's such a great moment. Mm. We've been playing it live on this tour with Live and Incubus. And when that happens in the song, it's just such
And thanks so much for playing the song.
Absolutely.
We love it.
You know?
It's good.
Yes. You're making it actually exist by playing it. We're stoked. Thank you.
We love your new stuff. And you talk about nostalgia, like it's nearly 30 years, you know, like, and the same lineup, that's really special. Mm. Like that's quite rare. I mean, like, what's the secret?
We just have session musicians. We fire when we get frustrated. No, I think I believe the secret of our band still being together is that we actually like each other. That helps a lot. We get along really well as people. But there's definitely a chemistry that we felt as soon as we walked into the room for the first time. Whenever we get on stage, I think that's what people respond to. They like the songs, hopefully, but I think they see the chemistry between the three of us and that's just what works.
Yeah.
So I think that's been a bit of a secret to our longevity.
And a bit of, you know, Stu's humor helps as well. He's a very funny guy.
Yeah, absolutely.
So as long as he's cracking gags, we're there for it.
You're good.
Basically.
And it's cool to have like other things going as well, like your solo stuff, you're in the studio heaps. It's good to kind of have these things running parallel, I guess, that you've got this beautiful thing that you three have created that you can always come back to and there's a massive audience for it. Like it is cool to be able to bounce back between projects, right?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I think Cav and I in particular have cornered ourselves into a place where we can't do anything else but music.
Yeah.
So we just have to do that.
Yeah.
Basically, Stu's good at other things. So, you know, he's doing some other stuff. But for Cav and I to come back write a song together or whatever always feels like home.
Yeah, awesome. Mm.
You know?
Yeah, cool. Yeah. And to do an acoustic tour, that's pretty fun, man.
Yeah.
And we were saying off air, you've got some pretty cool people joining you. We're only Mr. Dan Sultan, Josh Pike, Augie March. And the man who loves a yarn. But I keep my work, Mr. Scotty Darlow. These shows are going to be fun, man. Talk to us about preparing for an acoustic tour.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting one because I don't think we've ever done anything like this, gone into these beautiful theatres in country towns and just kind of stripped back the songs and done that kind of show. But everyone's really open to it and loves the idea of it. And I think it's a really good chance for us to go into some places we've never been before as well. We're going to Mount Isa, which is like, I think, near the border of Northern Territory in Queensland there. So that's going to be really great. And like you said, we've got some really cool friends that we're going to pick up along the way. So yeah, Josh Pike's there for a show. We've got Dan Sultan for a bunch of shows. Augie March, you know, who we love. And Scott Darlow, who, you know, myself and Joel have both worked with before. Yeah. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, nice. And so how much work kind of goes into an acoustic tour? And like you said, playing in these venues when you're playing an acoustic show, I think John Butler was in, he goes, there's nowhere to hide when it's acoustic. You know what I mean?
I was going to say that actually. That you get a bit more nerve-wracked for acoustic shows because when you've got the Eskimo Joe, I guess, or whatever rock band machine behind you, it's a billion decibels and you feel a bit unbreakable. But when you strip it back to just that, you are exposed.
Yeah.
But, and to answer your question, we don't know what it's going to be like or what it's going to sound like because we haven't started actually rehearsing it yet. Yeah. But it's going to be a bit of a creative process, which will be always fun.
Yeah, and it's
take a couple of chances.
You know? It's fun to play these songs that have been playing for so long and be able to kind of mess around with the arrangements, right? And to kind of discover them again in a new way.
That's it.
Yeah, and also let the songs just be the songs as well. You know, we do a lot of, you know, jumping around in stretch tight jeans trying to, you know, sell our wares. So it's going to be nice just to sit back and let the songs take, you know, center stage.
Yeah, absolutely. And for fans wanting to come along to these shows, like you said, it is really cool being able to take a show like this and going regional. Like you guys have done a lot of regional tours throughout your career.
Yeah.
It's a pretty magic thing to do to go to these small towns, right? And the community all kind of come together.
It's wicked.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to it. And also just finding, like Joel said, you know, finding some new places in ourselves musically to play because we get into these kind of rhythms of playing these big rock and roll shows and they're great, but we're going to have to dig deep and find some other places to do these acoustic shows, which I think is exciting.
Do you guys write on the road or when you guys are kind of frequently touring together or is that more of a time just to celebrate the live aspect and chill out and have a beer?
I mean, Cav used to write a bit on the road back in the day.
Mm.
Now it's like just trying to survive at this age.
Yes. It's just going back to our coffins and just sleeping through the day.
Yeah. Do you remember your worst acoustic performance? I think every band can remember like...
Yeah, it was like 2 weeks ago. We played at this gig kind of in the middle of nowhere in WA and we went completely off script.
Yeah.
Actually, can I say, Stu had COVID.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we were feeling, one man down.
Okay.
But he was there, but maybe just in spirit. And I kind of went way off script and started playing 500 Miles by the Proclaimers unannounced and Cav just kind of stepped to the back of the stage.
Back into the...
But the crowd loved it.
Yeah, of course.
But yeah, we went way off script, which is nice because usually an Esky's show is pretty organized.
Yeah.
It's like...
Very structured. Yeah.
But this, it could get wild on this acoustic tour. Yeah.
A lot of people have said as well for these acoustic shows that there's a lot of pressure on the onstage banter because when it goes... At a rock gig, there's always kind of like noise happening around, but when the acoustics stop, it's silence in a theater.
I actually love that part of it. I'm a notorious storyteller and I love it. In those scenarios, you can actually go deep into storytelling. You can tell the full stories behind the songs, and that can be part of the performance as well.
Awesome.
I think that the stories become as important as the songs themselves.
That's cool because this is a segment now that I'm hoping that I can get some stories from you guys. This is cool. I'm not sure if we played this before. This is called Memory Lane, right? And what I've done is we've gone through your gig history, right? And I'm going to pluck random ones out to see what you remember over your career. Okay, now it doesn't have to be the actual gig.
Very worried.
Yeah, no, it's good. You can go. It can either be like hanging out at the hotel, having a bite to eat, Jules, like that kind of thing. So let's go back to 1999 when you played with these guys. You played with The Offspring But chatting to Stu, you also witnessed a bit of history.
So, for 90 years, the Collingwood Footy Club have held the record, and for 62 years, it stood at 12.99. Will he write his name in the record book forever?
Come on,
with this kick, it's going to go.
Tony Lockett kicking his 1,300 goal. Talked about it.
Yeah. Well, we'd seen that week, I think, and we were on tour with Offspring, and I mean, Lockett was backstage that night, and he'd just become immortalised. Yeah. I couldn't believe how damn big the guy is.
He's ginormous.
He's like the size of the wall kind of thing, but he was really chill, and we went up to him and said hello, and he kind of seemed a bit awkward. Like, he was out of, you know, he's backstage at a rock show. It's not his home ground. Yeah. But I was kind of like, oh, you know, what do you reckon? That's your legend.
Venue, like,
and he's like, he's like, where are you playing? Where are you playing next? And I was like, oh, Melbourne Tennis Centre. And he was like, good venue. Good venue. It was like, yeah, for tennis. But he was an absolute legend. And we're pretty stoked to meet him.
All of these kids ran backstage as well, the Offspring were like, oh, crap. And they ran straight past Offspring up to Tony Lockett. Yeah. And they were like, what?
That is sick.
Yeah. I also remember when we were at the game watching, so he kicked that goal and then the whole audience just like ran onto the field.
Yeah.
Which you don't really see in a footy game.
It's called a crowd.
The audience, that's the one. Yeah.
I love Plugger upstaging the Offspring at the Offspring gig.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
What was it like kind of playing with the Offspring, you know, in those big arenas at that time, 1999, like massive band?
It was a dream come true.
Yeah.
Really? We were playing at, I guess, 20,000 people each night, and we'd just come from playing in tiny pubs, and we were thrown in the deep end. But I think that's what kind of makes a band. You know?
Absolutely. You learn so much, you know, if you pay attention, there's so many things to learn.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the main things is how do you keep that many people, you know, occupied in a set? Mm. So, yeah.
I remember one night Stu's amp blew up on that tour and it, talk about exposed.
Yeah.
You know, like the kids were there for a show and we were on stage for about 10 minutes with no sound. That was scary.
Did anyone help? Their roadies come to your aid or anything like that? Like, what happened?
I hid behind the drum kit.
Dug into our stand-up comedy routine, which we've been doing for a little while. When we first started as a band, we entered the campus band competition, and you had to have 20 minutes of music, and we only had 15 minutes. So we called them and said, "Oh, can we play for 15?" And they said, "No, you have to play 20 to qualify." So then we just made up a 5-minute stand-up routine, and so we just. That was always our default, you know, when things went bad, we're like, I say, and Stu would just tell some terrible jokes that have aged really badly.
Anything you can remember from the stand-up routine now?
No.
We won't be going there. You played a lot of these, but let's talk. This might have been your first one, 2002, Big Day Out. Silverchair. Prodigy, we had the White Stripes too. And Chop Suey. Big Day Out. Talk to me, lads.
Yeah, I mean, that was wild because, you know, for every band, I guess bands have a similar feeling getting to play Splendor in the Grass now, but it's like if you've released a record and you get on the Big Day Out, it's like it's just what you've been dreaming of doing you know, your whole career. And, of course, there was all these great bands, so we're watching them. I was a huge White Stripes fan, so I remember going kind of standing side of stage and having a little jazz cigarette just standing on stage watching them play before they had completely blown up. So that was a really special experience. But I do remember going to talk to the drummer, Meg, from the White Stripes at the after parties, because the after parties were great at the Big Day Outs. And I remember, and of course we were like, you know, 20 years old at the time, so there would be food and booze there, and so I'm like stuffing my face full of samosas and then I got to Meg White and I'm like, oh hey, that was a really good show, arf arf arf, you know, do you want to come and sit with us? And she just kind of had this wry smile and she was like, no, yeah, whatever. And anyway, I was like, cool man, and then off I went. Then, by the end of that Big Day Out tour, because that was our first one, as you mentioned, we were like, now felt like we're professionals.
Of course. We
had done the Big Day Out. So at the Perth after party, I went up to Meg.
Which is the last one.
Which was the very last one. And she was standing there and she had a bottle of whiskey shoved down the front of her jeans. And she was like, and I was like, oh, look, hey, you know, I was a bit drunk at the other after party, but I just want to say it's been, you know, great playing this tour with you. Rudder, rudder, rudder. I walked away thinking, and she's just had this wry grin on her face, just looking at me going, mm-hmm. Yeah. And then taking swigs of the whiskey and then putting it back in her jeans. And then I went to the toilets afterwards and I was like, I think that went really well. I think I came across quite well. And it was at that moment when I looked in the mirror that I remembered that someone had drawn a texted beard and moustache on my face about half an hour earlier. So she was clearly looking at me just going, who is this goose trying to talk to me?
Were there any other bands you remember watching that you might not have heard of that you remember kind of seeing and being introduced to? Like you said, the White Stripes before they blew up, you know, those big tours, like discovering bands?
Yeah, there's definitely bands that, I mean, like even just going to a big day, if you wander from stage to stage, you end up seeing bands that you wouldn't have particularly sought out. I mean, I remember La Tigre were one that I saw. I think they kind of came and went, but I remember discovering them on that tour and them being really cool. And
I remember Phil Jamison always being there whether Grinspoon were playing or not.
Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty sure they played at that big day out. I'm sure.
What, all four of them? I'm sure he was back.
Just came up for a cameo.
Just being a rider spider.
Yeah.
I do remember like having utmost respect for Phil because I've seen him at the big day out and he would go on stage and do this routine where he'd have like, you know, pom-poms and he'd look like he was really, really drunk.
Yeah.
And the crowd loved it.
Yeah.
And then I was like, how does he do that? He's hitting all the notes. Like he's singing really well. And then I realized he was just pretending to be drunk when he walked on stage. And I was like, that is genius. And so, you know, because if you're playing a big day out, especially and it's like 11 o'clock in the morning, you know, but in Perth, it's like, you know, 8 o'clock in the morning, you can't be chugging down beers.
No, exactly.
So yeah, that was one of the first moments where I realized it's okay to not drink and just pretend you're drunk and it still has the same effect.
Yeah. Cool, man. It's a really interesting thing, isn't it? When you're kind of playing early in the day and you've got the rest of the day to fill. When you are younger, you just kind of crash pretty early, hey?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or you go the other way.
Or you run out of beer.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't know if this is, sometimes you look at these gig histories and they're not right, but did you play with Nerd and Good Charlotte on the Vans Warped Tour?
We did one Vans Warped in Perth in 99, so yeah. I reckon that would have been around that time.
Yeah right. Wow.
So that's pretty amazing to think that we played with NERD.
Yeah.
Like, sick.
Any memories from that?
None.
No.
All right. Sorry.
That's all right. Let's go 2011. Coldplay. Oh. Gotta testify. Come up in the Kanye. Gotye as well. Foster the People were exploding. Splendor, you've done a few, but was that your first, you think?
No, it was our second, but we played the main stage at a really sweet spot. We had like, the sun was going down and I don't think we really appreciated it until afterwards. Like, oh wow, that was a sweet spot they gave us.
It was pretty amazing actually watching Coldplay on that gig. They'd just become a like bona fide stadium band all over the world. And when they came on, it was just like next level. Like Chris Martin was obviously super charming and doing the Chris Martin thing, just being a legend, but they sounded unbelievable. And it was just like, oh, that's the bar.
Yeah.
That's where it's at.
Yeah.
There was a lot of talk about how Kanye was going to arrive. They were like, he's going to come in a helicopter, you know, he's going to parachute in, you know. And of course, he just arrived in a Kia Carnival like the rest of us. And so that was exciting because Kanye was, you know, he was, you know, a really huge artist at the time as well.
And
Kate Moss was hanging out backstage because she was dating the drummer from The Kills.
Oh, right.
And so that was pretty exciting.
Yeah.
Did you get to stay for the whole festival? Or were you kind of in and out doing other shows around it?
I think we just stayed
for a couple of days.
Yeah.
I think.
We stayed there for a day or two at least. Yeah.
Yeah, nice. This was awesome. We were watching everyone here in Victoria from, at home. Grand final.
Yeah.
Talk to us about that. I mean, what was that whole experience like being asked to perform, having it in WA? It looked amazing and it was magical to watch from here.
Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of sad that it's happened because it was so much fun. I guess it's one of the biggest bucket list moments for any Australian artist is to play a grand final. It's a big deal in this country.
It was kind of blinking, it was over.
Yeah.
It was like 4 minutes, but I think in those 4 minutes, you're more adrenalized than you've ever been. It's like a 4 minute bungee fall.
Yeah.
You're just like,
because it's kind of thing. There's so much pressure on, everyone gets slayed who plays a grand final. So you want to, you want to enjoy yourself, but you also want to do a really good job because you don't want to stuff this up. This is your one.
Generally, if people are talking about your performance around the water cooler on a Monday from a grand final, it hasn't gone well.
Yes.
Unless Robbie Williams did a great show, right? And the Killers had a great show, but history's littered with disasters from the grand final.
Of course,
so you're just like, you're having these dreams beforehand that, you know, the belt around your jeans is going to fail and you'll have a wardrobe malfunction or whatever could go wrong.
Yeah.
But it actually all went right. Kev did an amazing job front manning and running the distance of the field and all that sort of stuff. So it was an amazing day. And I think we were on such a high afterwards, you know, even though it was 4 minutes, that adrenaline stuck around.
Of course.
Then you're at a grand final.
I was going to say, what was like at WA? Like, that's where you guys are from. Like, what's it like? What was it like to have it there?
It was amazing. Huge because we knew it would never happen again. It was like, I had a moment with the premiere. We did this photo shoot up on top of Optus Stadium. And, you know, after all the press had cruised off, I was just chatting to him. And he was like, and I was like, well, this is pretty amazing. He's like, enjoy it because it's never going to happen again. Like, he literally said those words to me and I was like, oh, he's right. You know, this is such a moment in time where like just all of these things have aligned just for it to happen here. It's never, ever going to happen again. So, so it felt pretty cool. And we felt proud to be representing one, you know, West Australian artists as well.
I think when the grand final is in Melbourne, it's such a buzz in Melbourne, right? It felt like that times like five.
Of course.
Because like Cav said, it was never going to happen again. And it felt like with a place like Perth, it's kind of isolated. It's a smaller city. But for that one, you know, week, it felt like it was kind of the center of the the world.
Of course.
You know, AFL grand final. The vibe was amazing.
The funniest thing is we did this photo shoot, the day before, and I'd had that moment with the premier, like, so he knew my name, didn't really know anybody else's names. And so he had the cup and they took the photo with him. And then he turned to me, he's like, oh, Cav, you look like the most untrustworthy one here. You can hold on to this. And then I had the cup there. And then just quickly, as you could imagine, I just saw Joel and Stu's hands just be like, zoomp, zoomp. And they were both holding the cup. And then I had someone else behind me going, I'm untrustworthy too. But we were there holding the cup. It was pretty wild.
Oh, that's cool, man. Yeah. And like, how much warning do you get for a performance like that? Was it kind of last minute or you guys
It was kind of last minute because of all the border stuff that was going on. It was confirmed that it was going to be in Perth for the last minute, and then I actually had to quarantine because I flew over from Melbourne for 2 weeks beforehand. It was still, I think once I hit quarantine in Perth, it still wasn't 100% confirmed, and it was like, it was like a thriller novel going into that thing. Mm. And there was a whole lot of pre-production involved and rehearsing, and it was all last minute. Like, I remember when we were rehearsing on the ground the day before, there's explosions going off and people running in the wrong directions and people yelling at people, don't run there. We're just kind of do a show. Like, this is wild.
It was pretty quick, like, getting onto the stage and setting up. Like, what was the time in between, like, kind of being in your dressing room and on, was it mad rush to get up there and get it done?
Yeah.
It was.
It was.
Yeah.
They put us in a holding pen. So it was us and John Butler and maybe who else played? The Waves? Was it in kind of a holding spot?
Straight after us, there was the big kind of all-star sing-along.
And then it was a mixture of feeling like there's the Oval, this could be amazing, or we could be the Christians going to the Lions, right? So it worked out well. Everyone had a good show that day, I think.
Yeah, it did. The scariest moment I had was because I thought it was a good idea to run over to the boundary line and sing it. And I was just like, yeah, let's do this. This could be the only time I get to do this. Yeah. But there was like a dead spot because we've got in-ear monitors that are on these little packs. I was running from where our stage was over to the boundary line, and there was a spot where my pack dropped out, so I wouldn't be able to hear any of the music going on or anything, and I just had to hope that when it kind of came back in again, I would know where I was in the song. But I had this moment of like utter dread where I was like, okay, this could be the moment where it all goes horribly wrong, but it didn't.
That is so gutsy.
Mm.
Good stuff. That's really cool. All right, well, you guys are here. I want to play one more quick game with you. This is cool.
On Triple M's Homegrown with Matty-O, it's time for...
Uh-oh, it's Right Party or Dinner.
So that's Jules on the vocals out there. This is called Right Party Dinner. I'm going to give you three acts, right? You can either write a song with one, party with the next, and the third you take home to dinner.
Ooh.
Okay, pick completely at random. Your first act. Even if we're just dancing in the dark. Bruce Springsteen. Second act. Purple rain, purple rain. And your third act. I wanna kiss the bride, yeah. Elton John, Right Party Dinner. Your three acts are Bruce Springsteen, Prince, and Elton John.
Well, it's got to be Take Bruce Home to Dinner.
Love it.
Write a song with Prince?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because if you have a party with him, he'll just disappear.
Yeah. And then Elton John, you've got to party with Elton.
Yeah. Oh,
even if he's not drinking, it'll be more
absolutely.
Fun.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Hey, lads, thanks so much for coming in. We're pumped for these acoustic shows. We love the new track. And, all the best. We can't wait for you to play more shows here in Melbourne. See the tour. You can check out those dates. TripleM.com.au, kicking off on the 27th of April, going through to August. Super exciting. We've got Augie March, Dan Sultan, Scott Darlow, Josh Pike joining in. Lads, it's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Maddie.
For having us, Maddie. Cheers.